We begin with paragraph 53 on page 20. And the paragraphs beginning with this one, there's a detailed explanation of the passage given in paragraph 42b. There are four kinds of virtue, the virtue pertaining to the restraint of Patimokkha, and the virtue of the restraint of sense faculties, and virtue of livelihood purification, and virtue concerning requisites. So we have finished the first one, and now we're going to the second. And in this paragraph, the author speaks of the usage. So seeing with the eye, seeing a visible object with the eye. And seeing with the eye really means seeing with eye consciousness or seeing consciousness. And the teachers of old explained that the eye cannot see because it has no mind, and the mind cannot see because it has no sensitivity, or no eye. But when the object strikes against the sensitivity of the eye, there arises the eye consciousness or seeing consciousness. So when we see something, we see with eye consciousness or seeing consciousness. And the usage, seeing with the eye, is described as the accessory locution. I don't know what that means. Accessory locution. In Pali, it is called sa-sambhara-katha. And the example given here is, he shot him with his bow. Well, what is the meaning of to shoot? Because the Pali word here is to pierce or to hit. So he hit him with his bow. Actually, he hit with the arrow and not the bow. But without the bow, you cannot shoot the arrow. So the usage comes to be as he hit him with his bow. So shooting may mean, can you say you shoot with a gun? Then shooting may not be the correct translation.
You shoot an arrow with a bow and you shoot bullets with a gun.
Right. But the usage is you shoot with a gun.
Yeah.
Right? Then we can say you shoot with an arrow here.
You shoot with a bow, that's correct.
Uh-huh.
Maybe more correct with this, you shot him with a bow and arrow.
That's right. Now, when a monk sees a visible object, then he apprehends neither the signs nor the particulars. Now, the sign here means the sign of a man or a woman. That means when a monk sees a person, then he is not to see that person as a man or as a woman. Or any sign that is a basis for defilement, such as a sign of beauty, etc. Or as it is beautiful, it is attractive, and so on. He stops at what is merely seen. So he must train himself so that he stops at just seeing and not going to making evaluations or putting some values on the thing observed. And this kind of advice is given in many suttas, especially to Mahalunkya Pota and bahiya. So Buddha said, just stop at seeing when you see something. So do not go to putting some more thing on it. Here also, just stop at seeing and do not take the object as a man or a woman or attractive or beautiful and so on. And he does not take the particulars. And here particulars means the aspects of or the shape of whatever of hand, foot, smile, laughter, talk, looking ahead, looking aside and so on. So these are called particulars in Pali, anubhyanjana, because they make known or they particularize the defilements. So when we take particulars of what we see, then the defilements the defilements grow in our mind. So we are not to take neither the signs nor the particulars. He only apprehends what is really there. That means he only apprehends the visible datum there. Just seeing a visible object and not seeing a man or a woman. And that is very difficult to achieve. And it would be possible only when you practice mindfulness meditation. Without mindfulness meditation, it's very difficult to just stop at seeing and not seeing a man or a woman or going to the particulars. Suppose you hear a sound from outside, then in a fraction of a second you have computed all the particulars of the sound, whose sound it is, where it comes from, whether it is loud or soft or whatever. So it is very difficult to stop just at hearing when we hear something and just at seeing when we see something. Only long practice of meditation, vipassana meditation, can help us to achieve this. But in this story, this monk was not practicing vipassana meditation actually. He was practicing the contemplation on the foulness of the body, or 32 parts of the body. Among the 40 subjects of calm meditation, there is one subject called contemplation of the body. And it consists in contemplating on the different parts of the body and viewing them as foul or repulsive and so on. So this monk was practicing that kind of meditation, especially contemplating on the bones. So when he met that woman and that woman laughed and showed her teeth, he got the sign of the bones and not the particulars of a woman. That is why he said, I did not know whether a man or woman went this way. What I noticed was just a skeleton.
A group of bones.
A group of bones, yeah. There goes a group of bones. And he was able to... And after that, the sign of bones came to his mind. And he contemplated on the bones as vipassana, as impermanent, as suffering, as egoless or as insubstantial. And so he was able to reach arahantship while standing there. So he has long been practicing calm meditation, and at that moment he practiced vipassana meditation, depending on his subject of calm meditation. So he reached arahantship through the practice of vipassana meditation, actually. And In the paragraph 57 and so on, the author described when restraint or non-restraint actually arises. And I hope you understand the passage. If you have gone through Abhidhamma, you will easily understand. So restraint or non-restraint is not actually in the eye faculty or in the eye. Since neither mindfulness or forgetfulness arises in dependence on eye sensitivity. On the contrary, when the visible datum as object comes into the eye's focus, then after the life continuum has arisen twice and ceased, the functional mind element accomplishing the function of adverting arises and ceases. If you are familiar with Abhidhamma, you understand it easily. Life continuum is, I think you remember, Bhavanga. And then, functional mind element accomplishing the function of adverting is just the five sense door adverting. Do you have the diagram of thought process in mind? So you have to understand this with reference to the thought process.
The 17 moments?
Yeah.
Actually, restraint or non-restraint comes only at the moments of javana, moments of impulsion. Because restraint is kusala and non-restraint is akusala. So there can be restraint or non-restraint only during the moments of javana. So this is what the commentary is telling us in these paragraphs. So in the five sense door adverting, there is no restraint or non-restraint. And then seeing consciousness, and then receiving consciousness, and so on. Only when we reach the impulsion stage or javana stage will there be restraint or non-restraint. And in the footnotes on page 23, I would like to make some corrections or additions. The second paragraph of the footnotes. There is no unvirtuousness, in other words, bodily or verbal misconduct, in the five doors. Consequently, non-restraint, at least put non-restraint of unvirtuousness, happens through the mind door. And the remaining non-restraint, there also, we should say non-restraint, the remaining non-restraint happens through the six doors. For the arising of forgetfulness and the other three could be is better than would be, because they can arise in five doors as well as in the mind door. So could be in the five doors since they are unprofitable states. Unprofitable means unwholesome state, opposed to mindfulness, etc. But not end. But there is no arising of unvirtuousness consisting in bodily and verbal transgression there, because five door impulsions do not give rise to intimation. Do you remember the bodily intimation and verbal intimation among the 28 material properties? So among the 28 material properties, there are two which are called intimation, bodily intimation and verbal intimation. Bodily intimation means just something like gesture, and verbal intimation means not really speech, but that which causes speech. Uh-huh. So they are called bodily intimation and verbal intimation, and the sub-commentary and all the teachers of old explain that the verbal intimation or bodily intimation can be caused by the javanas in the mind doha thought process only, not five doha thought process. So it is explained here as the because five doha impulsions do not give rise to intimation. And the five kinds of non-restraint, beginning with unvirtuousness, are stated here as the opposite of the five kinds of restraint, beginning with restraint as virtue. And these five are given on page 7. So you may go back and read. So restraint or non-restraint arises only at the impulsion stage. Now, next, page 24, paragraph 60, we come to the livelihood purification. Are you familiar with the rules of rules for monks? They are called Patimokkha rules. And there are 227 rules for monks and 311 for nuns or bhikkhunis. And when a monk or nun transgresses these rules, then they come to some kind of offense, we call offense. And there are 7 kinds of offenses. And 6 are mentioned in this passage. With livelihood as cause, with livelihood as reason, one of evil wishes, a prey to wishes, lays claim to a higher than human state that is non-existent, not effect, the contravention of which is defeat. So this is the worst kind of offense a monk can make, a defeat. That means if he breaks this rule, he is defeated. He is no longer a monk, although he may be wearing robes and claiming himself to be a monk, but in reality he is not a monk. And then the next one is meeting an offense entailing a meeting of the order. That is the second grievous offense. When a monk comes to this offense and wants to get rid of this offense, then he has to approach the Sangha, or at least in the initial stages, 4 monks, and then and finally he needs 20 monks to perform a kind of act of Sangha. So in order to get free from that offense, a meeting of the order is required. So that is a second grievous offense. And then the third one is a serious offense. This is the third one. Serious offense. This can be got rid of just by making confession. So if a person says, if a monk says, not referring him to himself directly, but he would say, the monk who lives in your monastery, in the monastery you have donated, is an arahant. Actually, he wanted to say, I am an arahant. He is not really an arahant. But he didn't say, I am an arahant. But he would say, the monk who lives in your monastery is an arahant. And if the person whom he is speaking to knows that at the very moment, then he comes to this offense. So this translation, the contravention of which is a serious offense in one who is aware of it, that does not give the meaning of the Pali. Who is aware of it? Actually, that means if the other person understands at that very moment. Now, Vinaya, I mean, disciplinary rules for monks is very much like the law, the secular law. Now, this offense, a monk comes to this offense only when the person understands at that moment. If after some moments he doesn't understand as soon as the monk has spoken, but he thought about it later, and then he knows, then the monk does not come to the offense.
You mean the person he's talking to?
That's right, yes.
If the person he's talking to thinks he's an arhat, then it's okay?
That's okay, right. And it doesn't believe him. if the person knows that he is referring to himself, then there is an offense. And then the next one is with livelihood as cause, with livelihood as reason. A bhikkhu who is not sick eats superior food. Actually, he has I would say rich food rather than superior food. A monk must not, order here means to ask for. So a monk must not ask for other people to give to him. His asking or his begging is by standing silently. So we would pick up our bowls and then stand in front of a house silently. And that is our begging. So that is called Aryan begging, a noble begging. We don't say anything. We don't say, please give food to us or whatever. We don't say that. But we, with our bowls, we stand at the entrance of the house. And then lay people come out and they give us what they have. So order here means just asking. So a monk must not ask. The contravention of which is an offense requiring expiation. Requiring expiation. Well, what is expiation?
Forgiveness.
It's actually by confession. We make confessions to each other, not to a confessor like in Catholicism, but we confess to each other. So by confession. Now the next one is with livelihood as cause, with livelihood as reason. A bhikkhu ni who is not sick eats superior, also rich food that she has ordered for her own use. The contravention of which is an offense requiring here special confession, not just confession, special confession. There are two kinds of confession we make according to which rule we have broken. So this rule, the contravention of this rule requires a special confession to get rid of it.
So for a female monk, of opportunity to do the same act is requires more. It's more of an offense.
Not necessarily, because there are some rules for monks also, for which they must make special confession.
Still, it seems.
Yeah, sometimes it seems that breaking the same rule incurs different offenses for nuns and for monks. That's right. So these are the rules laid down with reference to livelihood of monks. So actually, in order to purify his livelihood, a monk must just go out for alms and not do any other thing like fortune telling or reading palms and all these things. So these are the six rules, especially laid down with reference to the livelihood of a monk. And then there are other things given in Visuddhimagga, and the author took them from the other book called Mahanidesa. So scheming and other things. But if you have read all these pages, you know how crafty the monks were in those days. So they are not difficult to understand. Now, So let us go to paragraph 74. Suggesting is insinuating by specifying thus, that family alone understands me. Actually, that is not correct. The correct meaning here is, that family knows me only, and not others. The monk wants to impress others. Yeah. So, I am the only one, and that family knows. Something like that. So, that family knows me only. Not that family alone understands me. If that family alone understands me, then I'm not impressive. Only one family knows me. And on page 29, paragraph 78, and here there should be told the story of the bhikkhu supported by a family. Here also, it is not the bhikkhu is supported by a family, but a bhikkhu who frequents families, who visits families quite often, so as to get acquainted with them, and so he could get some things from them. So the translation should be like, who frequent families, not supported by a family. So the Nyanamoli always makes this mistake. The Pali word is kulupaka. And kula means families, and upaka means approaching. So approaching families, that means visiting families to get acquainted with them. And this is not a good quality for a monk. A monk should not visit families very often. So when a monk is referred to as one who frequents families, it is a kind of censure. So this monk is very, very cunning in this story. And in the end, he got what he wanted. The woman became frustrated, and she said, there is no hoodwinking the shaveling. she could not deceive the monk, so she had to give the monk what is there in the house. And then on paragraph, let me see, page 30, footnote, in the footnote, see, I'll read it. A donkey, you belong to the states of loss, you belong to hell, you are a beast. There is not even a happy or an unhappy destiny to be expected for you, and that is also not correct. If someone were to say to me, and I do not have a happy or unhappy destiny for me, I would be very glad. Because it is only an arahant. But it is, these are the words of abuse. So what really means is, there is not a happy destiny for you, but only an unhappy destiny for you. You are going to hell, something like that. So, there is not a happy destiny for you, but only an unhappy destiny to be expected for you. It is taken from other books, not directly from Visuddhimagga. So, there are some forms or some words of abuse current during the time of the Buddha, and you are a thief, you are a fool, you are an idiot, and so on. And then on page 31, towards the bottom of the page, Reflecting wisely is reflecting as the means and as the way. By knowing, by reviewing, is the meaning. Now, with regard to four requisites, monks have to make reflection whenever they get the requisites and also whenever they make use of them. So when we put on our robes, then we have to reflect on it, like I put on the robe to ward off cold, to ward off heat, and to avoid bites by insects, and so on. And when we eat also, we have to make reflection. I eat this not to beautify myself, not to take pride in my strength, but just enough to keep me going, practicing what the Buddha taught, and so on. So reflection is here meant. And the Pali word is yoniso patisankhaya, and it is the explanation of these words. So reflecting as the means and as the way really means reflecting by proper means, or knowing by proper means, knowing by what is the way. And the meaning is just reflecting or reviewing with wisdom, with understanding. So reflecting wisely, he uses the robe and so on. So from cold, from heat, and for protection from bites of insects and other things. And paragraph 87, from contact with gadflies and flies, wind and burning and creeping things. So they are explained here. In paragraph 86, page 32, the top of the page, for protection, for the purpose of warding off, for the purpose of eliminating it so that it may not arouse affliction in the body. For when the body is afflicted by cold, the distracted mind cannot be wisely exerted. That is why the Blessed One permitted the robe to be used for protection from cold. So in each instance, except that from heat means from the heat of fire. The origin, actually, it's not the origin, the occurrence of which should be understood in forest fires and so on. So it is not the origin, it is occurrence or happening. The Pali word is sambhava, and sambhava can mean a cause or just happening, and here it means happening. So that means the example of fire can be seen in a forest fire or house fire and so on. Fire means that kind of fire. And alms food, neither for amusement and so on, they are not difficult to understand. And on page 33, paragraph 90, and here the clause, neither for amusement, is stated for the purpose of abandoning support for delusion. Or we can say basis for delusion. And then further down, not for smartening nor for embellishment, is said for the purpose of preventing the arising of fetters for another. What does that mean? Not for smartening, not for embellishment. It's said for the purpose of preventing the arising of fetters for another. Actually, we should reflect this way so that we do not have defilements, and also other people have no defilements for us. If we take food for smartening ourselves, embellishing ourselves, then we'll become attractive, and so it may arouse some defilements in other people as well. So instead of saying the arising of fetters for another, we should say the arising of fetters for others as well. That means for others as well as for us, for ourselves. And paragraph 91, end of paragraph 91. For the endurance and continuance of this body can be understood to mean also. So we should put also after to mean, for the purpose of maintaining the occurrence of the life faculty in this body. And paragraph 92, about middle of the paragraph, for while this bhikkhu is engaged in crossing the desert of existence by means of devotion to the three trainings, that means the practice of the three trainings. You know the three trainings? I think you can guess. That's right. Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. So they are called three trainings. And devotion to really means practice of. So practice of the three trainings depending on bodily strength, whose necessary condition is the use of alms food. He makes use of it to assist the life of purity, just as those seeking to cross the desert used their child's flesh. And it refers to a sutta in Sanyutta Nikaya. And you may read that sutta in the book of Kindred Sayings. So Kindred Sayings, second volume, page 68. The reference given here is to the Pali, original Pali text. S means Sanyukta Nikaya, 2 means volume 2, and 98 as a page number. So in the English translation, it is Kindred Sayings, volume 2, page 68. And it is not a real story, actually. Buddha gave it as an example, as a simile. So you should view the food in this way, something like that. So two people, a couple and a child were going through the desert, and then the insufficient food supply, but maybe they couldn't make to the end. So the supply dwindled, and then they had nothing to eat. So they discussed among themselves, say, if we cross over to the safe place, then we can get a new baby. So why not kill the baby and eat it, so that we can cross over across the desert. And it was not expressly said in the sutta that they killed the baby. And the commentary here explained that they didn't kill the baby, as though it were a real story. The father sent the baby to the mother, and the mother sent the baby to the father. And so, walking back and forth, he fell down and died. So eating the flesh of one's own child. So if you have to eat the flesh of your own child, you eat it because you have to and not because you want to. So that is the point here. So those seeking to cross the desert use their child's flesh, just as those seeking to cross a river use a raft, and just as those seeking to cross the ocean use a ship. And the verse given on page 34 down below, with four or five lambs still to eat, let him then end by drinking water. For energetic bhikkhus' needs, this should suffice to live in comfort. This is a stanza much quoted by especially by our teachers or by monks who wanted to advise other monks not to be greedy in eating. So with four or five lambs still to eat, let him then end by drinking water. So don't eat to the full. So leave about four or five lambs and drink water instead. This way you'll be comfortable. And it is true, if you eat too much, and especially when you're on a retreat and have to meditate, you'll find it very difficult to meditate. So it is better not to eat to the full, but to eat a little less and drink water instead. For energetic bhikkhus' needs, this should suffice to live in comfort. Energetic bhikkhu really means a monk who has sent his mind to Nibbana or to the attainment of Nibbana. The Pali word is interpreted here, translated here differently by Western people and the traditional teachers. So according to traditional teachers, the word means one who has directed his mind to the attainment of Nibbana. But the Western scholars translated this to mean having made effort or energetic. The Pali word is pahitatta. So it can mean both things, both meanings. One who has sent or who has directed his mind to Nibbana, or one who has made effort. And the second meaning is preferred by Western scholars. So here, for energetic bhikkhu's needs, or here energetic really means one who is practicing meditation with a view to attaining Nibbana. This should suffice to live in comfort. So a meditating monk should not eat much. Now, resting place, or just the dwelling place. What is a lean-to?
Like a tent, a very rickety tent.
The Pali word is Adha Yoga, and traditionally it is translated as a building which has only one part of roof. So it's something like a lean-to. A monastery or a lean-to. There are five kinds of dwellings allowed for monks. So one is monastery, or it is called a vihara in Pali, and the other is a lean-to, and there are three more. Now, the Pali word for a dwelling place is for monks is senasana. Sena comes from the root which means to sleep or to lie down. And asana comes from the root which means to sit. So really, a place where a monk lies down or sleeps and a place where a monk sits is called his place, his dwelling place, his senasana. So when a monk makes use of dwelling place, That is when he enters the building, or when he goes out of the building, then he must make this reflection. I used this dwelling place to ward off cold, to ward off heat, to avoid bites of insects and so on. The last one is the reflection on medicine. These are called four requisites of monks: food, clothing, dwelling place, and medicine. So in paragraph 96, about 6 lines down, any work of a medical man, such as oil, honey, ghee, etc., that is suitable for one who is sick, is what is meant. The word for ghee is not in the Pali original.